From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl.
Well, thanks, everybody. Thank you. Much appreciated. We do have a great show for you today. Tech guru Guy Kawasaki will be joining us later to play Not My Job. But first, like a lot of people, we were really impressed by poet Richard Blanco's performance of his inaugural poem this week. It was called One Today. It was really classy, you know, and we thought we would try to up our game, start our show the same way, with a poem we've commissioned from our, poet laureate, Mr. Carl Castle. Carl?
There once was a quiz show from Nantucket.
No, wait a minute. Okay. Good try. We'll work on it. Be back with you in 4 years. If you've got some verses you want to share, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Mike from Washington, D.C.
Hey, how are things in Washington? Did you stick around in town for all the festivities, or did you get out of town?
I stayed in town, but I didn't show up. I stayed away from downtown.
That's the cool thing to do.
It is the cool thing to do.
To be unimpressed. All right, now, Mike, let's introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian whose special I Come in Peace premieres this weekend on Showtime. Mr. Maz Jobrani is here.
Hello there.
Next, the woman behind the advice column Ask Amy. It's Amy Dickinson. And the author and humorist whose latest book is Alphabet or Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt Jr. is here. Hey. So, Mike, welcome to the show. You're, of course, going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, standing right here, is going to start us off with three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain that. 2 times out of 3, do that, you win our prize. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right, Mike. Your first quote comes from Fab, formerly of Milli Vanilli. He's talking about Beyonce.
Everyone should just step back and relax. There are far more important things to worry about. But I can certainly relate to what she's going through.
Mm. I bet you can, Carl. Fab was responding to claims that Beyonce lip-synced at what big event this week?
That would be the inauguration.
Yes, indeed it would be. Very good. The second inauguration of President Obama wasn't quite as inspiring as his first. You could tell he was enjoying never having to run for anything again, especially when he ended his address, God bless America, and smell y'all later. And then he picked up Joe Biden and smashed him on the stage. It was like... he didn't spend any time in his address. Did you notice he's reaching out to his opponents at all? If the theme of his first term was Obamacare, the theme of the second will be Obama don't care.
What's with the she did a good job of the she ripped the earpiece out.
Oh, well, all right. Well, forget the address. We'll forget the president. Let's go right to Beyonce. I understand where your priorities are.
Well, you know, she's hot. So,
well, here's the thing. As everybody knows, they had all these singers at the performance, and Beyonce did the national anthem. And very soon afterwards, there were accusations that she might have lip-synced. On the one hand, people watching the tape say that her lips exactly matched the sounds. That's very hard to do with lip-syncing.
Well, yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah. Now, this is what people heard via the speakers and on their TVs. Beyonce.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn?
Right. Okay, so there you go. It's Beyonce. Nice. And, you know, we got the close-ups on her. It looks like she's moving her lips just in time to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But here's the thing. NPR, as you know, was broadcasting the inauguration, and we happen to have a feed directly from the soundboard. So this was what Beyonce's mic was picking up.
Oh, see, can you see by the dawn's early light, while so hell and high at the last gleam.
So, it's not definitive proof, but I think Beyonce owns us some answers.
But also, look, even if she lip synced, I mean, it could have been worse. She could have been singing like the North Korean national anthem. That would have been
bad. That's true.
I'm always tempted to lip sync this show.
Really? Yeah. Here is your next quote. It's from, of all people, Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
Since I was a sniper in the Israeli freedom fighters, I am all for it.
Dr. Ruth was commenting on the story this week that the U.S. military will now allow who to serve in combat roles?
That would be women.
It would be women, and it is women. Very well done. The Pentagon has finally lifted its ban on women serving in frontline combat platoons. The best part of this is how embarrassing it will be to the Taliban. Not only were you just shot, you were shot by a girl.
I think it's great, women in combat, but we've got to be prepared for war movies from now on to be a lot more like Mamma Mia.
More singing?
Lots of dancing.
War the musical?
Yeah. Well, it is true. War movies will be different. They'll be like Full Metal Jacket and matching slacks.
Yeah.
Saving Meg Ryan.
Right. There you go. As the lone woman here up on stage, can I respond?
You may.
You know, on behalf of all my sisters?
Yes.
Here's what we think about that. Yay.
So they get to go to the front lines. Like, why would you want to go? I would think you'd be like, no, it's cool. You guys go.
I am. I'm like, after you.
What's interesting about the debate that started once this announcement was made is the kinds of objections that came, especially from male soldiers. One former Marine, he was writing in the Wall Street Journal, he talked about how disgusting he and his fellow Marines are while in combat and how uncomfortable it would be for the woman to be around that. Mm. Of course, a female soldier might be able to prepare for that experience by simply being around any man ever.
Mm. Well, also, just real quickly, when you said that it was Dr. Ruth Westheimer, said that she was a sniper?
Yeah, this
you
is
are.
True.
Dr. Ruth
imagine
Westheimer.
That.
She's
yeah.
not as...
She,
the
she's
rifles
tiny.
Are bigger than her.
Yeah.
She's a tiny person, but she was able, when she was a younger woman...
sniper she would be, because she could run underneath everything, you know?
And you look up in the tree and you say, that can't be the sniper, that's Dr. Ruth.
Mike, for your last quote, we're going south to Florida for a story that caught our eye. Mm-hmm. This is a quote from a story from the AP, some advice for travelers who are taking on a special contest that's going on in Florida this month.
Drink water, wear sunscreen, and don't get bitten by anything.
So if you needed another reason to go to Florida, the state has created a month-long contest with a top prize of $1,500 for the person who catches the most what?
Oh, I saw something about snakes in Florida. So, pythons?
Yes, giant Burmese pythons. Very good, Mike.
Thank you.
As we have mentioned on this show, Florida is overrun by giant Burmese pythons. They're decimating the local wildlife. They're ravaging the buffets at the all-inclusive beach resorts. And many of them are apparently voting for Pat Buchanan for president. So, the state of Florida started a contest. $1,500 to whoever kills the most pythons, 1,000 to whoever kills the largest python, and 24 live sheep to the python that bags the most amateur snake hunters. Just to make it competitive.
So the state is sponsoring a competition, and the best they can do is $1,500?
Yeah.
How bad is the economy there? Like, $1,500 to go face a snake? Are you out of your mind?
How much would it cost for me to get you to do it, Mike?
Oh, yeah, you have to start it at least a million. Million? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to mess with a snake. That's like this whole... You should send some of the combat women to go fight the snake.
Draft the snakes. Let the snakes fight.
Let the snakes fight the Taliban.
Joining us now to discuss this latest effort to make Florida livable for humans, we're happy to welcome back once again Wait Wait's resident Florida expert, author Carl Hiaasen. Carl, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be there.
Carl Hiaasen. So the great Florida giant Burmese python hunting contest, this is obviously your next novel writing itself, I assume.
Really? The only thing scarier than the pythons is hundreds of redneck tourists with firearms.
Yes. So I mean, this is, you know, the economy's still a little depressed. Could I make a good living hunting pythons in Florida?
No, I actually went on a wild python hunt a couple years ago and to do a column about it for the Herald. And it's a long day, and they're as big as they are, they blend in pretty well. And I don't know, like you said, $1,000, you could spend weeks and weeks and maybe catch one puny little python. So this is not something people are doing for money. They're doing it for the sheer sport of it, as it were.
Right.
I mean, we'll take anything that brings tourists down here. Trust me. Anything that brings a single warm body into the state at this point, we'll go for it.
Are they in swamps, or are they like at the beach, South Beach? Like, where would you find these pythons?
Oh, God, if only they were on South Beach.
That would be awesome.
Oh, that would be... Listen, I would put up bleachers. No, they're out in the swampy part of the Everglades. They live along canals and lake banks, and you have to kind of creep around. And then when you see one, you leap out of your vehicle, and you leap on the snake, and you pray that he doesn't get four or five coils around you. And they caught one a couple months ago, Peter, that had a it was easy to catch because it couldn't move because it had just digested a 74-pound white-tailed deer. Now, I mean, that's like a Michelle Bachmann-sized deer.
I do believe.
Oh,
I do believe
an image.
Congresswoman Bachmann is the universal measure of deer size.
Yes.
Hunters brag. Oh, that one's three Bachmanns I got this week. Carl Hiaasen is, of course, a columnist for the Miami Herald and a great author of very funny books. Carl, thank you so much for calling in. We love talking to you.
All right.
Mike, we appreciate your patience. How you doing out there? Carl, how did Mike do in our quiz?
Michael, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your answering machine or voicemail.
Well done. Thanks for playing, Mike.
Thank you.
Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jesse in Boston.
Hey, Jesse, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, most people, when they say they're from Boston, they don't mean Boston. They mean someplace near Boston. Where are you from?
I'm originally from New Hampshire, but in the moment, I'm currently in the heart of Boston.
Really?
I am.
Well, what do you do there?
I am a project manager at a textbook publisher.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, are you doing textbooks for little kids or big kids or college kids?
College kids.
College kids. So this is the complicated stuff.
Yeah, the hard stuff.
Yeah, these are the books that cost like $100 and the kids are forced to buy them.
Yep, and I do the online ones so they can't sell them back.
Ha, 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 ha. That is a great business.
Yeah, it
is. Well, welcome to our show, Jesse. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jesse's topic?
The arc of history bends toward justice, and sometimes justice is kind of dumb.
This week, our panelists are going to read you three stories of new rights being fought for and won. Guess the true story, and you will win Carl's voice on your answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Sounds good.
First, let's hear from Maz Jobrani.
6 years ago, police in England tried to prosecute Oxford student Sam Brown. The offense? One night after drinking a little too much, Mr. Brown approached a mounted officer and said, "Excuse me, do you realize your horse is gay?" Yeah. Now, I can't imagine anyone has a problem with a horse being gay or straight or even pretending to have a fake girlfriend. But according to Section 5 of the Public Order Act, it's illegal to insult a police animal, and police press charges. They also slapped a fine on a 16-year-old in Newcastle who dared to say, "Woof!" to a police dog. Well, fear no more, immature Brits. That law has now been amended, and you can freely go about calling horses gay with abandon. The law is on your side. Simon Calvert, the Reform Section 5 campaign director, said, "This is a victory for free speech. People of all shades of opinion have suffered at the hands of Section 5. He then turned to a police horse standing next to him and said, "So, are you gay?"
You can now publicly insult all kinds of things in Britain, including police horses, thanks to the repeal of a repressive law. Your next story of freedom, sweet freedom, comes from Amy Dickinson.
The issue of prayer in school took a new twist last week when an upstate New York school board voted to allow a student to worship her Lord and Savior, pop star Justin Bieber. Sophomore Isabel Richards said she was listening to Bieber's latest album called Believe when she felt a religious calling to take her fan worship to a new level. She set up a shrine in her locker full of Biebernalia where she practices her religion, Bieberism. She holds services Tuesdays and Thursdays during third period study hall and offers communion with five-hour energy drink and Oreos. We're not saying he's the God. We're saying he's like, oh my God.
The student wins the right to worship Justin Bieber as she sees fit. Your last story of somebody fighting for their rights and winning comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
No one has a right to shout fire in a crowded theater. But this week we learned that we do have the right, at least in California, to make fart noises in a crowded elevator. even in extreme circumstances. Herbie Goss, a 24-year-old messenger, was one of eight people in a Sacramento elevator last year when it stalled between the 12th and 14th floors. Wee-oo, the passengers were thinking, and then they began to hear various versions of issuing at random intervals from, they began to figure out, a straight-faced Herbie. Over an hour later, when the elevator got working again, passengers demanded that Herbie be arrested, claiming that his sound effects had caused near panic. Indeed, Herbie was charged with disturbing the peace, and a Sacramento County Appeals Court upheld his conviction. But last week, the state Supreme Court overturned it, ruling that Herbie had just been trying to relieve the tension. And that fart noises were a form of speech in no way intrinsically disruptive. To prove his point, the judge let a real ripper himself from the bench. And then invoked the age-old principle, qui fragrat prodat. He who smelt it, dealt it.
All right. So, here are your choices. From Maz Jobrani, thanks to the repeal of a law in the UK, you can now insult police animals and a lot of other things without fear of reprisal. From Amy Dickinson, a student in upstate New York, wins the right to worship her personal idol, Justin Bieber. Or from Roy Blunt Jr., thanks to an enlightened judge in California, it's perfectly fine to make fart noises in a crowded elevator for hours at a time. Which of these is the real story of a freedom fought for and won?
Ooh. I think I'm going to go with the gay horse.
I got a nickel for every time I said
that. And where
that.
Are you going to go with the gay horse? You're going to go with Maz's story of now it's legal to call a horse gay. That's your choice?
Yes.
All right, we spoke to someone who had an opinion about the real story.
It was previously illegal to say woof to a police dog in the UK. That law is overturned.
So you got it right. That was Jeff Meyer, publisher of Police Canine Magazine, expressing his incredulity that saying woof to a dog could ever be illegal. But you were correct. Maz had the true story. You've won a point for him, and you've won our contest. Carl Castle, we'll record a greeting on your home voicemail. Well done.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. And now the game where we ask interesting people about things that do not interest them in the least. 30 years ago, Guy Kawasaki went to work for a computer company that was trying to change the business with a product named after a fruit. Since helping launch the Macintosh computer, Guy Kawasaki has been a venture capitalist, an author, a business consultant. We're delighted to have him here because we've got some complaints about the reception on our iPhones. Guy Kawasaki, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you as a young man out of Stanford, I guess, went to work for Apple back when? Like 1980, around then?
1983.
And what was it like then? I mean, it wasn't the huge, you know, planet-devouring behemoth that it is now.
Well, it was still quite successful. It was a hot company in Silicon Valley. Believe it or not, you know, back then, the state-of-the-art of computer interfaces was pretty much plain old letters, you know, ASCII letters. And so to have a mouse and to have a button and to be able to draw and paint and multiple fonts, it was a religious experience.
Really?
Yeah, not unlike being on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah. You really are a dork, sir, if that's... You left Apple and you wrote a book called The Macintosh Way. You were trying to
Yes.
this philosophy of like Macintosh applied to the rest of people's lives and their businesses. And one of the chapters is The Macintosh Guide to Dating and Marriage.
Oh. Yeah.
Please tell us now how to date and marry the Macintosh way.
Well, it is all about product positioning. So you have to be likable, trustworthy, and competent. Yeah. And that eliminates most men.
Yeah. I mean, were you serious about this? Were you like, the Macintosh can be a model for how you can get a date?
Well, you know, I had to reach a certain page minimum for that.
Yeah, I understand how that goes.
funny.
So ever since then, you've been out there and you've been like a venture capitalist. You've been helping people start up their own companies, trying to be the next Apple. I assume that people approach you with dumb ideas all the time.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Can you tell me some of the dumber ones?
So one company wanted to build a geodesic dome over Los Angeles to prevent air pollution. I don't remember if it was to keep the air pollution in or keep it out. Another company wanted to buy the country of Israel and make it into an amusement park for the rest of the Middle East.
Ooh. Ooh. Really?
Yeah, really.
You mean like instead of like the Holy Land, they're like Holy Land.
Was Mel Brooks involved in this caper?
I remember reading a column you wrote many, many years ago where you were saying, well, you know, they've got all these devices and these things. You know what I really want? I want like one device that can be like my address book and my calendar and my phone all at one time. And I remember reading that and thinking to myself, that's a crazy idea. How could that ever work? So as far as I'm concerned, you invented the smartphone.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, I think Steve Jobs deserves more credit than I do.
Well, how does it feel to have ruined everybody's life, though? Because now I haven't seen my children in 3 years. And I live in the same house with them, God.
Well, why don't you just text them?
I could do that. Do you ever feel, because you've been in tech for so long, do you ever feel like we've gone too far? We're like too obsessed with our gadgets and our things and our tablets and our phones and our interfaces and our whatever?
Oh, but Peter, I mean, think of who you're asking this question. This is like asking the Pope if he's too Catholic.
So you don't feel like there's more and more and more?
The more people in Silicon Valley make with these companies, the more we can participate in the donations during your telethon for NPR. We love it.
That's true.
There you go.
We appreciate that.
So you've done for NPR is what you're saying. This is all for wait.
Every morning I get up and I say, how can I help Peter Sagal and Terry Gross?
So here's the thing. People should know that Guy is only kidding a little bit. Because because a couple of years ago, somebody sent us this book that Guy had written. And it's a book, I think it was called Enchantment. It's another book on business and skill and getting ahead and getting what you want in the world. And as an example of how to do things well, you use this radio show.
Ooh. Yes.
God.
Which was something. Yeah. And then after that, we found out that like you had done this keynote address at some big computer conference, and you finished it by saying, by the way, if anybody knows anybody, wait, don't tell me, I really want to be on it. And we were like, all right, we got to ask this guy, this pretty prominent guy in the computer world who keeps talking about us, what is your problem?
Is there a wait way of dating?
Maybe the chapter came up because he was just trying to fill the book again. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I know. It's like, wow, on page 100, I got nothing else to
what
say.
What else can I grasp? But,
what's on the radio?
He just turned it on. He's like, this guy's a genius. I'll write about that.
Well, guys, Kawasaki, we're delighted to talk to you, and we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
I want to start a religion. That's where the real money is.
Now, that is a pretty famous quote attributed to L. Ron Hubbard. He is the founder of Scientology. And his amazing story is told in the new book by Lawrence Wright called Going Clear. We're going to ask you 3 questions about the life and times of Mr. L. Ron Hubbard. Get 2 right, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, and, of course, a lawsuit from the Church of Scientology.
Peter, before you do this, can I tell you a story?
Oh, by all means.
Okay, so a few years ago, I made a speech, and I had a slide that had a mock book cover, and it was a mock title of Gaianetics.
Gaianetics. Because Mr. Hubbard's famous book was Dianetics, so Gaianetics.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And I got a letter from L. Ron Hubbard's law firm saying I cannot use such a title.
Really? And how did you respond?
I caved.
Yeah. You're not the first. We may not be in the air next week. We'll see what happens, but we're going to try this. Carl, who is Guy Kawasaki playing for?
Guy is playing for Maria Cuevas of San Francisco.
All right, Guy, here's your first question. Mr. Hubbard said that his initial revelation of the true secrets of the universe came to him suddenly and unexpectedly when? A, when he got hit on the head with a coconut. B, quote, in the physical act of love. Or C, while at the dentist's.
Wow. I would have to say that it's unlikely L. Ron Hubbard sat under a coconut tree or made love, so I'd pick the dentist.
He actually did both those other things, but you're right. It was at the dentist. He says, Mr. Hubbard said, that while under anesthesia at the dentist's, he had a near-death experience, which allowed him to see the secrets of the universe, until the voice yelled, "No, he's not ready," and sent him back.
Hmm. I tell you what, from now on, I'm going to floss every day.
I think so. All right, that's one question right. Your next question, L. Ron Hubbard had modest origins. He accomplished a lot. One of his methods to propel himself forward to great things was a list of what are called affirmations, things he said to himself until he believed they were true. Which of these was one of L. Ron Hubbard's personal affirmations? A, that he could get nourishment, if necessary, by eating wood. B, that he was the reincarnation of Shakespeare, Milton, and Dickens. Or C, that there were, in fact, no snakes under his bed.
I would say that he had thought that he was a Shakespeare and whoever else you said. Shakespeare, that.
Shakespeare, Milton, and Dickens.
Yes.
They wrote a kind of software. You might not have heard of them. Mm-hmm. So you're going to go for that one?
Yeah.
No, no. The answer was a C, that there were no snakes under his bed. The
wow.
list of affirmations is quite remarkable, makes for very interesting reading, and apparently, among many other things he worried about, he worried that there were snakes under his bed. This is exciting. It's the last question. If you get this one right, you win it all. Here we go. As the spread of Scientology was met with increasing resistance and criticism, Hubbard became convinced that somebody was behind the opposition to him. Somebody was organizing it. Who was it? Who was his enemy out there somewhere? Was it A, the Queen of England? B, Smersh, that's the evil conspiracy from the James Bond novels, or C, the Muppets?
I don't even care if it's wrong. I have to say the Muppets.
The Muppets, that he actually believed the Muppets were out to get him.
Yeah, Muppets.
You're sure about Muppets?
Well, if I'm wrong.
Guy.
I meant the Queen.
So you're going to go with the Queen, are you? I'm just thinking about all those really, really nice things you said about us in print. So,
how about the Smersh?
How about Smersh? Yes, that's the answer. It was Smersh. Hubbard decided that the people out to get him were all organized by Smersh, a fictional evil cabal he found out about reading James Bond novels. Carl, how did Guy Kawasaki do on our quiz?
Finally, he got the two correct answers. So with the two correct answers, Guy wins for Maria Cuevas.
Well done. Thank you, Guy. So, Guy, since you were so obsessive about getting on our show and so eager to do it, now that you've done it, what is left for you in your life?
Fresh air.
Yeah, well, I think you put us in the right order. Guy Kawasaki's latest book is Ape, How to Publish a Book. Guy Kawasaki, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Don't Tell Me. Bye-bye.
What do we call him? He needed a great name. One like no other. Finally, they found it. They called him.
In just a minute, Carl and Zoe Deschanel announce their new side project, She and Lim. It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roy, a computer programmer, got fired last week when it turned out that for months he was supposed to be working from home, but he had been doing what?
Sneakily working from the office.
No. Well, that's funny, though. Sneaking in, getting away from the wife and kids, sitting in his cubicle. No.
He had been working from, some other country, some...
Sort of, except he hadn't been doing the work.
Oh.
He had?
Beyonce had been doing
the
work. He had been...
If it's good enough for Verizon customer service, it's good enough for Bob from IT.
Oh, he had outsourced his work.
To China. Yes. Oh. The man was earning about $250,000 a year for writing software and was reportedly the best developer at the firm when, in fact, he was paying a guy in China to do his work while, and this is true, he watched cat videos and shopped online all day. The firm condemned the man's actions in an official statement signed by the CEO and written by an intern. It's kind of brilliant when you think about it.
Wow, it is.
Because he basically, he got paid $250 a year, and he paid $50 to the guy in China for whom it was a fortune, and he didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Delegating, it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I could watch cat videos all day. I mean.
Oh, boy, you could.
Well, all morning, sure.
Moz, there's a new membership card that promises to earn its holders free goods and services just by officially identifying them as what?
A new membership card that will get them new services by identifying as...
Yeah, the idea is you pay $100 to get this membership card, and you have it, and you show it, this official-looking card, restaurants and places like that, and it will get you free stuff and good service because it says that you are what?
Polite?
No.
That you are not lip-syncing.
No. It's like, this is a nice little restaurant you got here. It would be a shame if someone yelped about it.
Oh, like you're a reviewer.
You're an online reviewer.
Oh, my God.
So are you tired of servers treating you like a normal customer instead of all-powerful amateur reviewer Donut Lover 69? Well, so is entrepreneur Brad Newman, and that's why he created Reviewer Card. The very classy black card will set you back $100. Is almost brilliant in its brevity. It reads simply, I write reviews. But Newman claims it will help members leverage the promise of positive reviews into discounts and free meals. Consumer Reports points out that it really gets you the same thing as the less expensive $50 please spit in my food card.
So he's selling this to people.
You can get this embossed card with your name on it. It says, right. I'm a reviewer, and you sort of show that.
That's the kind of thing you could never make for yourself. So
I know.
Right, that couldn't be done.
Roy, this week, New York Magazine reported that Donald Trump wants to buy what?
Donald Trump wants to buy... He has everything. What would he want? He wants to buy... Can you give me a hint?
It's like all the news that's fit to comb over.
Oh. He wants to buy the New York Times.
He does.
Well.
Sources close to Mr. Trump, who are the unluckiest sources of all, say he's been having meetings about the potential acquisition. It's a simple scheme. Trump plans to take over the old gray lady, then divorce her for a young blonde lady. It's rumored he wants to increase readership with old standbys like a sexy page 3 girl, like they have in Britain. But in a compromise with Nicholas Kristof, they'll be featuring a page 3 child soldier.
That could have been more tasteless, actually.
We always like to leave a little margin between us and the edge. Amy, the world was abuzz this week with the news that a professor of early humanity from Harvard was looking for an adventurous woman to do what?
Aren't we all?
Was. Does it involve dressing in a certain kind of...
No.
Does it involve a diorama?
No. It involves something, doing something that only a woman can do.
Giving birth to a... Cro-Magnon.
Close enough, a Neanderthal. A Neanderthal baby.
I had one of those.
The idea was that this doctor of genetics, actually, at Harvard was putting out the call for he needs a woman to bear a Neanderthal child. But in a disappointment to adventurous women everywhere, the whole thing was a translation error. He was talking to a German newspaper, Der Spiegel, that if he wanted to create a Neanderthal baby, well, then he would need an adventurous woman to bear the child. But since he is not going to do that, there's no need for interested women to get in touch with him via email or at his office number, which is listed online and in the phone book and in phone booths all around Harvard Square. He also said that the Neanderthal donor is into long walks on the veldt, charred meat and brow ridges, no phonies, and send a picture of your most recent kill.
It really sounds like a Hugh Grant movie. I mean, when you think about it.
It could be a Look Who's Talking movie.
Totally.
Look Who's Grunting.
Yeah.
Aren't all babies Neanderthals?
I know. I mean,
they kind of are.
True. How could you tell? Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. Also, if you want even less of us, we're on Twitter, @WaitWait, and I'm on Twitter at Peter Sagal. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Joe in Vancouver, Washington.
Hey, how are things in Vancouver, Washington?
A little rainy.
A little rainy. Now, Vancouver, Washington is not Vancouver, British Columbia.
That's correct.
Right. And how are the two places different?
I think they're a lot bigger than us, but we were established first.
So. I see. Sue the bastards.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to the show, Joe. It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
Now, Carl Castle is going to read for you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
It is me and a ramen bowl only, so I put in a dot for my phonely. Now dinner for one is a little more fun. With this screen, I'm a little less...
lonely?
Yes, lonely. Aw. Nothing makes you feel lonelier than eating alone, except for, of course, eating a bowl of ramen noodles alone, which is where the new anti-loneliness ramen bowl comes in. It comes equipped with a holder slot for your iPhone, perfect for checking your email, FaceTiming, and accidentally eating your iPhone. Here is your next limerick.
As I ogle young lasses in skirts, seeing London's top sights cannot hurt. See the Church of St. James and step up my game. The tour guide will teach me to...
flirt.
Yes! Do you like seeing the sights? Very good flirt. Are you hopeless with the opposite sex? Try the Flirting Tour of London. Mm. For $40, you tour the city with a flirting expert and learn to put the moves on beguiling young strangers, such as the beef eaters at the Tower of London. They never go out with you, but they never reject you either, you know. Safe for practice. The tour comes with two options, the beginner's tour, which takes you around Covent Garden, and the advanced tour, which gets you an STD. Here is your last limerick.
The orangutan here is a sly lad. He plays well with the tech toy that I had. He texts with short words, and he plays Angry Birds. He spends his free time with an...
iPad.
Yes! Mm. The National Zoo in Washington, D.C. has given iPads to six of its orangutans who have learned to draw on them and play a variety of games, such as smash the iPad on this rock, try to eat the shards of iPad... Mm. And smash what remains on a different rock. Zookeepers hope to teach them to social network with animals at other zoos using FaceTime, or as the baboons call it, butt time.
It's bad enough that we're obsessed and don't communicate with each other.
Yeah.
Now we're trying to get animals to not talk to us. Jeez.
That's really going to screw up our like mating in captivity program.
Yeah. I know, but if one of them ends up with more Twitter followers than me, I'm going to be really, really pissed.
I wonder if they have a ramen eater that they can put theirs
on. Yeah, I know.
Eat the ramen while they're...
Carl, how did Joe do in our quiz?
Joe had three correct answers, so Joe, you win our prize.
Well done, Joe. Congratulations. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie, Peter, for first place. Roy Blunt Jr., Amy Dickinson, and Maz Jobrani.
Wow.
They all have 3 points.
Wow.
Okay. Wow.
All right, we've randomly decided that Maz will go first. The clock will start when you begin your first question, fill in the blank, and testimony before Congress on Wednesday. Blank took responsibility for failures leading
Hillary
to the attack
Clinton.
On Benghazi. Right. With a narrow victory in Israel's general elections this week, Blank held on to his position
Netanyahu.
As prime minister. Yes. Protests and celebrations marked the 40th anniversary of the Blank Supreme Court decision this week.
Roe versus Wade.
Right. In an interview this week, Prince Harry said that he had killed members of the Taliban while in battle in Blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. A library in Australia found itself in the news after it jokingly put up a sign saying it was blanking Lance Armstrong's books.
Selling.
No, moving them to the fiction section. After a fall during inauguration weekend, television journalist and host of The View, Blank, was hospitalized while recovering from a head injury.
Barbara Walters?
Right. This week, government scientists agreed to retire all but 50 research blanks currently in labs and send them to sanctuaries.
Monkeys.
Well, specifically...
chimps.
Yes.
Yes.
Although chimps aren't monkeys, we know, don't write in.
Ooh.
A highway tunnel. I'm telling you, these people never leave me alone. A highway tunnel in Norway will be shut down for several weeks after being damaged by blank.
A highway tunnel by a truck?
No, tons of flaming goat cheese.
Ooh.
The delicious tragedy happened as the goat cheese was being driven through the Bratli tunnel in Norway. It burned for 5 days and closed the tunnel for weeks. Norwegians are making the best of the situation. They're airlifting in emergency supplies of beet salad and walnuts. Carl, how did Moz do in our quiz?
Moz had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Moz has taken the lead.
Well done. All right, Roy, you are up next. Mm-hmm. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, the House of Representatives approved an extension that postpones the blank battle till mid-May.
The fiscal cliff.
The debt ceiling. We'll go with that. On Thursday, John Kerry's confirmation hearings for the position of blank began.
Secretary of State.
Yet on Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg announced plans to hold a fundraiser for New Jersey Governor blank.
Chris Christie.
Yes. Although investigators haven't determined what is causing battery fires, the president of United Airlines called the grounded blank terrific and spectacular.
It's a airplane, Boeing airplane.
It is, but it's specifically the Dreamliner. Oh. An Alabama man who attempted to rob a Starbucks blanked when the cash drawer would not open.
Is he the one who just settled for a cup of coffee?
That's exactly right. In an interview with Katie Couric this week, Notre Dame linebacker blank answered questions about his fake dead girlfriend.
Teo.
Yes, Manti Te'o. Donald Hornig, one of the key figures in the Manhattan Project, in the development of the blank, died at age 92.
The atom bomb.
Yeah. 3 criminals in Colombia were forced to abandon their attempt to rob a convenience store after the heist was ruined by blank.
People in who run the store were enjoying it too much.
No. Their getaway was ruined by their getaway donkey.
Oh, I knew that.
You knew that. The criminals had stolen armloads of merchandise and were loading up their getaway donkey when the donkey, being an ass, decided to sound the alarm by braying until police arrived.
Oh. Hilarious.
So did they settle for coffee?
Apparently not. There's some down there. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 6 correct answers, 12 more points. Wow. He is tied now with Moz Giobrani with 15 points and the lead.
All right. So this is a relatively easy question, but how many then does Amy need to win?
6 to tie, 7
right.
to win outright.
Started the same place, they got the same answers. You get one more, you'll win. Here we go, Amy. This is for the game. Calling the United States its sworn enemy on Thursday, blank announced plans for more nuclear tests targeting the U.S.
Iran.
No, North Korea. On Thursday, Senator Dianne Feinstein proposed a federal ban on 120 types of blank.
Guns.
Specifically?
Automatic weapons.
Yeah, assault weapons, we'll say. This week, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was reelected for a second term as chair of the blank.
DNC.
Right. After last weekend's games, the San Francisco 49ers and the Baltimore Ravens are set to face off in this year's blank.
Super Bowl!
Right. This week, a Texas woman learned the hard way that it doesn't pay to blank when asked to walk in a straight line during a sobriety test.
Fool around.
No, moonwalk.
Crawl. Moonwalk.
Senator Frank Lautenberg said this week that Cory Booker is entitled to challenge him in the next election, but that he deserves a blank for being disrespectful.
A slap.
A spanking.
Ooh.
J. Crew.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes, I know. J. Crew announced that out of respect, they are retiring the belt worn by Michelle Obama at the blank.
The inauguration.
Yes.
How is that a respect? I don't get that.
Well, they don't want to, you know, capitalize on her somehow.
Okay.
I don't know why. In a huge international incident, the United Kingdom accused the nation of France of blanking.
Lying down for Hitler?
No.
That wasn't it.
Of emitting a huge cloud of gas.
Mm.
France apparently has a chemical factory that disagreed with it, causing the country to emit a huge but harmless cloud of gas smelling of sweat and rotten eggs, quickly spread, causing the cancellation of a French Cup soccer match. You'd figure a nation with so much cheese would cut some eventually.
Oh.
England has asked France to make restitution to offended residents on the coast and also to light the national match.
Oh.
Carl, did Amy do well enough to win?
Well, she needed 6 correct answers to tie, but Amy had just 4 correct answers. So, 15 points, Moz Giobrani and Roy Blunt Jr. are this week's co-champions.
Well done. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists, after Beyoncé allegedly might have lip-synced at the inauguration,
will be the next person to fake or perform it. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive, offering policyholders the option to bundle home and auto insurance coverage. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And to the National Association of Realtors and Advocate for Home Ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions' Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our volunteer coordinator is Ray Teresi. Our intern is I Would Walk 500 Miles Dernboss. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Nancy Popcan Showbiz. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike. Why don't you have a funny name too? Danforth. Now, panel, who will fake a performance next? Roy Blunt Jr.
Well, you know, they've been hyping this rivalry between the two brothers in the Super Bowl, two coaches, both the Harbaugh brothers. They're the same guy. They've been getting away with this for years, but now they're going to be in the same game. So one of them has to be virtual. And when somebody walks right through him on the sideline, people begin to wonder.
Amy Dickinson.
Lance Armstrong will lip sync Remorse, but we'll know he's faking it because his lips will be moving.
And Maz Jobrani.
Unfortunately, the next person to fake a performance in my life will be my wife.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
We're not going to ask Maz about it, though. Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Roy Blunt Jr., Amy Dickinson, and Maz Jobrani. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. NPR.